Welcome to the Attitat Show. Grab your gear because we're diving into the tech jungle with the indomitable Oleg Korenfeld, the tech whiz steering the ship at CMI Media Group. I'm Pesach Latin, your navigator through the chaos of clicks and code. Today, we're picking the brain of the man who plays 3D chess with ad tech, making mere mortals look like they're playing checkers. Oleg, are you ready to spill the digital beans and tell us how you keep the gears greased in the great machine of online advertising? Let's tear into it.
Deserve to win when it matters most. Facing multi-billion dollar bet the company litigation? No problem. That's why we're here. Trautman Amin, LLP, is a true legal powerhouse.
All right, everyone, fasten your seatbelts and hide your cookies, because today on the Adotit Show, I'm Pesach Latin. We're about to get up close and personal with the ad tech maestro himself, Oleg Korenfeld. This guy's been shaping the future of marketing with a magic touch that turns data into gold. Get ready for an electrifying ride through the world of ad tech, Oleg style.
Hey, how are
Oleg,
you?
How are you doing? How's life treating you? Are you dodging curveballs or swinging for the fences?
I guess it depends on the pitch. Everything is well.
Good. Share this juiciest tidbit from your recent escapades. Anything scandalous enough to make the office gossip
no,
and spill faster?
Very boring life. All is well. The great thing about what is happening now this year so far, I'm definitely traveling more into our offices.
Right.
Across our offices, we actually about to kick off a bit of a roadshow across our CMI offices. We have
right. Where's your main office?
Technically in New York. Philly is our biggest office, the biggest location, but we got offices in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, in Persephone, New Jersey, in Chicago, in LA. So
okay.
With the release of our platform, we want to do a bit of a kind of internal also roadshow with me and our CEO, Susan Dorfman, to kind of bring this into to our teams, explain to them what it means to them, explain to them how to talk about it to their clients, to our clients. So looking forward to that.
So I want to talk a little bit about CMI Media Group's Empower. It's like the Godzilla of health marketing tech. How does it feel to be the puppet master making competition dance while you pull the strings?
Feels good. Feels really good. I feel the opportunity that I was given at CMI to build a platform like this, and obviously not myself. We have an amazing team of product managers and product developers that help bring this whole thing to life. Obviously also many, many years of expertise in the company of building their tools to support our vertical. We are in a very unique kind of marketing vertical in health. Over the years, we've built a lot of great tools to address the needs of the types of consumers we're going after. Bringing it all together under one consistent SaaS-enabled platform has been absolutely amazing, and how quickly we've been able to do it from initial vision to launch in less than 2 years, which I think is an amazing achievement for us as a business.
It sounds out like Empower stands out like a sore thumb, but in a good way. In a sea of innovative tools, it's actually a really innovative tool. But what is the secret ingredient? And you can't say hard work and dedication.
Okay, I'm not going to use those two. There's a couple of things, actually. So like I said, we've been at it for over 30 years. As far as being a healthcare-only agency targeting healthcare professionals, doctors, basically, and patients. A couple of things that make this platform stand out is, one, our data sets. Our healthcare, very unique, very, very high-quality data sets that we've been able to create manage over the years, that kind of feeds the entire ecosystem. Any technology is only as good as the data that you feed into it. And we are sitting on the line of amazing healthcare data that helps us pull through this process from insights to planning to activation to measurement. It's all consistent. That consistency addresses effectiveness and efficiency and accuracy and all those elements. Another very important piece is SaaS enablement. This platform is fully SaaS enabled. If you work for an agency, you know you end up working with multiple different technologies. You'll end up with different platforms depending on the partner you work with. Our platform is built to be one consistent platform. You log into one place, and by you, I mean either our agency people, like planners, buyers, analytics, doesn't matter. But also our clients will have this access into our platforms. And also our publisher partners will have access into the platform. Everybody will be able to log into the same platform and manage that part of that process to whatever level they want or need for their business. So those things, I think, really make this platform stand out from another. Cobbling together the ad tech stacks that usually go into kind of creating a process.
So before we dive deeper, Oleg, what's the backstory here? You've navigated the ad tech seas like a modern day Magellan. Where'd you set sail from originally?
Oh my God. So yeah, it's been a 25-year journey. Last December, I celebrated 25 years in this industry. I started at DoubleClick in 19, so going all the way back there. And it's interesting, like looking back at 25 years, and I think that's what kind of makes my perspective work for me and apply it every day in my work is in 25 years, I spent about equal amount of time at this point on the technology side of things. Companies like DoubleClick, I also was at Media and early on when the programmatic was being invented, mobile technologies. I also spent a lot of time on the publishing side. So now, last years now, maybe a little more on the agency side, kind of connecting the three kind of sides of our industry, the buy side, the sell side, and technology in the middle that connects the dots, allows me that perspective that's been very helpful, very useful, I believe. And yeah, really been enjoying the ride because it's never been the same. Every year out of this quarter century experience has been different.
What's your feature in Empower? Is it one that you take home to meet your parents?
That feature in Empower?
Yeah. I know it's like choosing your favorite child, but what's one that you are so proud of?
Oh, man, it's hard to say. But, you know, for me, it's always not the sexiest stuff. It's always the stuff that maybe back office, it's some kind of interconnectivity element of the platform that connects certain processes that before been done by manual process with a lot of data entry that now just with button gets automated. So if I look at automation and how we've taken AI-driven bot development and put it as a backbone of everything we're building, to me, those bots that interconnect different stages of the process, and that often are not seen, but felt, because all of a sudden when a process used to take 5 hours, that takes 5 minutes to complete. And that's what really kind of gets me excited.
Quick fire. Favorite midnight snack when you're burning the midnight oil? And don't say something sad like celery, please.
No, absolutely not. Interesting. It's probably going to be pistachios.
Pistachios.
Yeah, they're very salty, so it's going to have to drink a lot of water, but pistachios is kind of, that's my go-to.
Who was your favorite person to work with, and why was it Brian O'Kelly?
In 25 years, it was my favorite person I ever worked with.
Right.
You know, here's how I'm going to tell you. Because I work with some amazing people in my career, and working with Brian has been a roller coaster, but I owe him, just like I think a lot of our industry owes him our careers, because by dumb luck ended up being at the company at the right place, right time, when it completely changed the trajectory of my career, being there. But if I think about the people who truly kind of had me from the beginning, it is the people from the beginning. Is that for the bullpen of a DoubleClick?
Right.
My job was all support for the original ad server. And that team that we all worked together when we were all in our early 20s, nobody knew what digital advertising will be. But to this day, these are my closest friends in the industry. These are the people who I still get together with for beer. These are the people who I still call on if I have some kind of career crisis that I need to talk to them. It's always that crew. It's who I started with.
Is there anyone specifically that's been a guiding light through your whole career?
It would be unfair to so many to kind of point out one person, but there's people like Jeff Silverman, for example, who was president of Media at DoubleClick all those years ago, and since then went on to do amazing things, and now he's a venture capitalist. But again, the one of those people who, if anything happens, he's one of the people, first people I always call and text, and he's always been there for me for 25 years and expect him to be there. But again, I don't want to kind of call out just one. There's been just so many amazing people that I'm grateful for. And the amazing thing about our industry is that no matter how big it is, it's still fairly small. So not burning bridges and not being an a-hole, pardon my French, is a very important part of kind of developing the career path for yourself.
In a world where privacy laws are tighter than my jeans after Thanksgiving, how does CMI steer the ship without hitting the iceberg?
You know, it's an interesting question because of who we are. As a healthcare media agency, we've had to deal with regulation.
HIPAA, for example?
Always. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's a kind of fake out thing for us. Oh my God, what are we doing? We know how to work within regulations. We've worked within them for the entire life of the company. It's now, how do we partner with publishers and ad tech companies who really need to make sure that on their side things are addressed properly? So when we go out and buy from them, there is that understanding, connection, and processes established ahead of time. So I think we're in a good place. We're working with a lot of great partners to help us keep everything kosher.
You ever found a creative loophole in privacy laws that made you feel like a legal innate, or is it more like a straitjacket escape artist?
That's a good question. No, I don't think so. I won't consider myself an expert, and a field expert in the nuances of every single law because there's just so many. I have my points of view. I'm hopeful that we can have something special in the United States, something more overarching like we do in Europe, instead of kind of state by state, because that feels like a death by 1,000 paper cuts. And I And I hope we can get out of this hamster wheel, whatever you want to call it. But no, I don't think I've been able to find anything that I would probably say, hey, here's a loophole that I could take advantage of.
Speaking of escapes, what's the greatest escape of a career? Is there a moment where you dodge a career-ending asteroid by the skin of your teeth?
Thankfully, no. I think I've had situations where I felt like I hit a wall and I didn't know what to do next. And I think that happens to a lot of people in any industry. And sometimes kind of moving and changing perspective, moving from the technology side to an agency side was one of those kind of really transformational career changing moments for me, just like all those years ago joining Bright Media purely by accident, the founder.
You just didn't wander in.
Well, I knew the founder of the company and worked together at DoubleClick, so that's how I ended up joining the company. But that was just dumb luck and being in the right place, right time. Making a decision of going from technology to an agency, that was a very hard decision to make. Like, a lot of my friends will say, what are you doing? Why are you going to the buy side? That's the dark side of our industry. Why would you want to do that? To me, I felt like I hit a wall. I didn't know what to do next. And kind of imagining sitting on the buy side of an industry and being able to hear and see every single piece of technology that's being developed seemed like an interesting puzzle to put together.
Is there any country that we should look to that you feel that the privacy regulations are the best?
No. Again, I wouldn't say that I'm an expert in privacy. Specifically, I think what Europe has done felt like the most consistent. And right now, I think we need.
So navigating ad fraud and brand safety is like walking through a minefield. How do you guys manage to dance through it without losing any limbs?
You know, that's like one of the oldest ad tech daisy chains to be built, right? So trusting technologies completely on the buy side to make these decisions for you is a mistake. And I think historically speaking, a lot of agencies are trusted, whether a brand safe company or a DSP, programmatic channels or whatever it may be, they will figure it out for us. And if something goes wrong, we'll point the finger at them. My approach to everything is, and I think maybe because I come from the technology side of things, and now being on the buy side, I want to understand and have full control of every stage of that process, of the daisy chain. And the better I understand it, the better I can orchestrate the technology that needs to be in place for me to be as brand safe as possible.
What was the wildest ad fraud scheme you stumbled upon in the last 25 years? Did it make you rethink your career choices or just double down on security measures?
Oh my God. Wildest. I mean, the iframing, the hiding ads behind.
I was about to say 1x1 pixels in the iframe because that was done all the time on Right Media.
Classic.
All the time.
Classics. Yeah. It's those classics that kind of go like, look, you can't blame technologists to go like, it's possible technologically. Why would I not take advantage of it? And then it's chasing the latest innovation of that kind of system and tracking it down and trying to build guardrails around it. That's been the funnest, I guess, to watch. But obviously, you know, fraud is fraud. Bot farms that create fake traffic is painful. It's been painful to watch in some cases, but there's some great companies out there that help kind of protect us from the stuff.
What companies do you guys depend on?
For brand safety? DoubleVerify has been our partner for the last couple of years. Depending on the situation, but I would say between DoubleVerify and our own, like I said, our own process and our own engagement with every piece of technology, whether it's from DSP side to SSP to any kind of supply curators in the middle to ad servers, working with each one of them together, it helps us build a safe environment for our clients. Again, because of the vertical we're in, we have to be extra vigilant.
Switching gears to lighter side a little bit, what's your go-to artist when you need to unwind? So I see you play guitar and there's a little blues guitar back there, right?
And yeah.
I see.
Ellis style there. It depends. I think, I listen to everything from bluegrass to metal, and it depends on the situation. Sometimes to relax, to unwind, to put me in a very kind of thoughtful mindset. Leonard Cohen, you cannot. He's absolutely amazing. But also, this morning I was listening to Judas Priest new album that just came out.
Five Finger Death Punch or Devil Driver?
Neither. I'm too old school. Who knows? I need to go to the 90s.
You've been all over the world actually. Which country do you never tire of visiting, and why? Is it the ad tech scene or the food?
From ad tech scene, honestly, and again, I know we live in America, but again, because of our scale, because of the money that we spend, we're so far ahead of everybody, and it almost like spoils us. I had a couple of years where I was in this global role where I had to go to different markets to understand what kind of tech is available in those markets to execute. Build this ad tech that was most effective for them. And it's interesting to see how small markets act like these little startup companies almost when it comes to that. So from the ad tech perspective, you cannot beat the investment and the opportunities to try things just because of how much money is flowing through our market. Food-wise, though, that's difficult because I love food and I experiment, and anything from going to Japan to going to Peru to Middle Eastern food. I love that. Italian food is...
Well, if you like Japanese, there's sushi samba, which is both Peruvian and Japanese.
I've been to that place many times in my life.
In the trend of in-house programmatic, everyone's trying to bake their own bread. Why do you think companies are rolling up the sleeves, and how does CMI fit into this homemade pie?
Look, anything that is... When I was talking about in-housing, the question always becomes, where do you draw the line of responsibilities? Because when it comes to programmatic, search, social, I can see why it may feel very easy to bring something like that in-house, but then you end up in a very kind of tactical process, and you're not tying it back to a broader kind of strategic needs of that channel compared to other channels you're activating against. So the way I think about it is, any marketer can absolutely invest in people and technology to bring in-house. The question being, how sustainable that is? Can you build a bench long enough for you to grow this inside an organization? Is your marketing budget big enough to sustain that at strategic level, at tactical level? And very importantly, an agency of your partner, like the role of your partner like an agency, is to kind of sit with you and say, okay, let's just divide and conquer. Here's all the responsibilities that are required to do this correctly, from planning across multiple channels to activation, whether it's programmatic, search, social, direct, billboards, you name it. If we can agree that these are all the necessary skills and responsibilities that are required, you want to take this percentage in-house, we will do this part, and we can work on it together. That works. I see that work in those situations. Unfortunately, a lot of times, it may seem very easy. I'll just cut a deal with the DSP, hire two programmatic traders, and that will be called my programmatic in-housing. Unfortunately, that's not enough to drive value out of that channel.
Is there a secret sauce behind a successful transition to in-house programmatic? And don't say Adwater.
Secret sauce is expertise. Is seeing the broader picture of how programmatic fits into the broader marketing strategy that they should have.
Is there a horror story from your in-house transition? Everything that could go wrong actually went wrong? And how did you make your way out of it?
No, I won't say horror stories again. It's more about, I would like to call it education and making sure that you understand the broader picture possible. And again, going back to kind of my career path and going like, because I spent all this time on the publishing side and technology side and now on the agency side, seeing that broader picture of how all these pieces need to come together and what drives each piece of that puzzle, what are the incentives of each of the entities that need to be involved in this puzzle, will make you better at what you do. So I don't think, I've never seen like a disaster. I've seen something like, could have been done better if you had this additional effort, if you had this kind of strategic effort before you went into just traffic campaigns in that server.
So what's your go-to drink after a long day of debugging programmatic issues? Is it a smooth whiskey or a calming tea?
Right after work and during work is coffee. I live on coffee. After work, I'm a whiskey guy. Neat, scotch, a bit of a snob about scotch.
So how does CMI support these freshly minted in-house programmatic chefs? Is there a secret cookbook or perhaps a hotline for emergencies? Or maybe a break glass in case of programmatic emergency?
I would say we approach it from a standpoint, going back to education. We want to make sure that the leaders in this organization see the broader picture more than just traffic campaigns to a DSP. If they understand their role in the broader marketing model, what their role is in the overall omnichannel strategy, that makes them better.
Is there anything that has been crossing your mind lately about the ad industry that you never mentioned in a polite company?
The beautiful thing about our industry and obviously the people that I work with, I don't think there's anything that is off the table, but we can be as honest and direct with one another, you know, obviously from not being recorded, and we can believe our egos and titles and the roles at the door, kind of talk about the industry as a whole, what makes it better. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy and prefer those conversations. That's what I think continues my own personal education that still motivates me to this day.
So give us the insights. Scoop, did you conquer today's to-do list or did it conquer you?
I would hope so. I conquered it. It's Friday. It's middle of the day. I have a couple more meetings before the end of the day. It's been a really busy week. We've made a big announcement of our Empower operating system launch. There's a lot of work around that. So I'm still running off of that adrenaline. So I think it's been a really, really great week.
So AI is obviously the new frontier. So we should probably talk about it. We're like in the Wild West, but everyone's riding on code instead of horses. How do you ensure your AI dreams does not turn into the town outlaw?
Well, first of all, I don't think we need to. There's no reason to be afraid of what it potentially could do in certain situations. Very programmatic and practical approach, understanding the types of AI that is available to us, and just because we can do something, should we be doing it, allows us to look at our process and go like, what type of technology, what kind of AI algorithms can help us improve on what we're doing today? Whether it's task automation, then I see a ton of value in that because that completely changes the ways of working. Or generative AI. How can we make our process of more than a prompt-based asking questions of a platform, as long as it's fed with quality data sets, so we can trust it, make it easier on us to get the results out quicker? To me, AI is about accuracy and speed to market. That's it. Those two things will change a lot of things, and I'm honestly very excited about it.
How do we prevent crossing into being creepy? Is it an electric fence or common sense?
Both. You need electric fence because not everybody will understand the details and nuances, because I can't trust everybody's common sense because we all have different common sense.
Right. So speaking of crossing lines, what's the most adventurous thing you've done? And I'm not talking about a new spreadsheet formula.
AI?
Oh, in general.
Most adventurous thing I've done in life? Leaving Siberia and moving to the United States at the age of 12. How's that?
You were in Siberia.
That's where I was born.
So everything's warmer.
Sometimes. I live in Chicago for a couple of years, and there was
that's pretty cold.
I would say that the Jessel Park.
What's the biggest... When you moved to America, what is something that you thought was really strange?
Oh my God, there was a lot. So I moved to America in New York, right. Brooklyn. Culture shock was probably the biggest piece of it because I was in the Soviet Union. But this is before we left in 1980. So that's about 6 months to actually get to the United States because at the time you couldn't just go directly. We left as Jewish refugees. There was a process that we had to follow. So coming into the States, to the culture, I would say that. Also, I definitely felt the pressure of assimilating as quickly as possible.
Right.
I've seen, the advantages for our diaspora, just for our culture, for a lot of other immigrants from around the world. Some have feel the pressure of assimilate. Some feel like they need to maybe preserve a little bit more the culture that they brought with them. I guess I was young enough, and I felt like I had to become part of this world. So that was probably the hardest part.
What's been the Everest of challenges in your journey so far?
Wow. I don't think I can say anything super profound at this point. From my kind of life path, living in all the countries that I lived in between the ages of, from birth till the age of 12, just getting here and kind of assimilating into this culture and still kind of being one foot in the old culture, one foot in the new culture. I would say kind of becoming myself and reconciling that in my mind and becoming kind of this new me. Well, right. I would say that's probably the hardest piece.
5 years from now, where is Oleg Korenfeld? Are you still disrupting the ad world, or are you on a beach?
5 years definitely still disrupting the ad world. I am a workaholic. I cannot see myself retiring ever, which is scary. My dad just turned 70, and he's still three different businesses, and he's not going to retire. And I'm looking at him go like, well, I know where I'm getting this from. So I'm definitely, and it's amazing. Still in it, still love it. And 25 years later, I still find so much new and exciting things to do. Like I'm not,
Think you'll ever retire? You'll always be doing this?
I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that because you never know where life takes you. Like I said, my career path took me in so many different places, but I definitely see myself working for a long period of time. Not because I have to, because I love to.
Do you have like a spicy take that you think that most people in ad tech would disagree with? Like cats run ad tech or something?
Again, as someone who's been in the industry long enough and my peers and people who I respect, I think we're fairly aligned. I don't think I have any kind of very disruptive point of view on the overall thing. Again, from the healthcare vertical where I sit right now, I think that the third-party cookie deprecation is not as existential to our world as it is to many other verticals. So I'm not dismissing how important that is and how much it will completely transform our industry. But again, sitting in our vertical, although it is not going to hurt us as much just because that's not how we aggregate data. That's not how we work with our suppliers to define our consumers. So it's going to be an interesting story to watch play out.
So if you could go back and talk to little Oleg when you first started in the industry, what would you tell yourself and would you listen to yourself?
Absolutely not. I was 20. There's no way I would have listened
to
a 46-year-old guy telling me what to do with my life. The one thing maybe I would try to get across is take time and to understand what motivates people around you. Because, sometimes you're running with blinders on and you think your point of view is the one that everybody knows and understands, but it's not. People come from different places, from different experiences. And honestly, I did not learn that and how it affects people in the industry till I joined the agency side. Because for the first time in my career, kind of so whole, people are motivated by completely different set of needs. And I would tell my younger self, be more mindful. People, what motivates people around you?
Was there a recent aha moment where everything suddenly clicked into place?
Recent. I think when we presented our operating system internally, and because it was basically taking a lot of different disparate solutions we've been built over the years for very specific parts of this planning and buying process, and showing them as one continuous flow, to me, it kind of clicked. Oh, I see how planners and buyers, how their ways of working will completely change. So that was an interesting one for me in recent times.
What's the weirdest dream you had recently? Or are your dreams a closely guarded secret?
Yeah, the latter. I'm sorry. My dreams, sometimes I wake up like, and it takes me a second to realize, hey, this was a dream, and God, not a real thing. And God forbid, I don't want to let anybody in my head.
You know, I hear that about a lot of people who are online a lot. They're not sure if something was a dream for a while or if it actually happened. Is there a recent facepalm moment where you couldn't help but laugh at yourself?
I feel like all the time.
Right? That's just hilarious?
Yeah, I feel like that's another thing. I never want to take myself way too seriously.
Right.
I feel fairly confident in my set of skills, and I've developed a really good kind of career path, and I'm very proud of what I've done. But at the same time, I know that I don't know everything. And every once in a while, talking to someone who knows something I don't.
And that's a wrap. Thanks to Oleg Korenfeld for sharing his pearls of wisdom and giving us a glimpse into the future of advertising. Before we sign off, a special shout out to our sponsor, Troutman Ammon, the pioneers in legal solutions for the digital age. Thanks for keeping the lights on and the pixels popping. Remember, folks, in the ever-evolving world of ad tech, curiosity is your compass, boldness your fuel, and knowledge your ultimate weapon. Until next time, this is Pesach Latin signing off. Stay curious, stay bold, and know more than you did yesterday.